everyone, thank you so much for joining us today. I am delighted to introduce our guest today. I know him very well, and I've seen his work in action, so I'm going to be able to talk on that. But our topic today is going to be around brand marketing and why you need brand marketing, why businesses are maybe, you know, using brand marketing in the correct way, and some that maybe could do it even better or with other ways of doing this. And so we've brought in a pro with us, and we have Sheldon Baker with us. So Sheldon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. A pleasure to be here.
Great. So Sheldon, first of all, you are a writer in my world. You're an editor, and I've seen you in action. I've seen your articles. I've seen some of your interviews, and I've seen a lot of your work. And so, you know, you've worked with companies such as Life Extension. You've worked in nutrition. So what, at the end of the day, I got to ask this question, and I ask it to everybody, but how do you, when you start to write, how do you start focusing? Because all our podcast is about focus, and people really kind of stumble when they start to write or have a hard time getting started.
Well, I enjoy writing, first of all, and it's a creative outlet for me. Certainly during the time we're in, that our world is in, health-wise, I find it as an outlet. So even if I don't have a writing assignment, be it for a client or for a publication that I may be developing an article for, I enjoy the writing aspect. It's calming. As I say, it's something that I enjoy. In terms of how I approach it, I always look at an article, especially more of a feature piece that's somewhere that's about 1,000-1,200 words for me, as being the parts of a puzzle. And I might know the subject quite well, whether it's an individual or a product or a company, but you know, there are a lot of moving parts. And so I tend to put an article together as you would a puzzle. And there's that opening, that middle and the end, and put it all together, draft it, real rough draft. And then sometimes often let it sit for a day and then go back to it and then do a final editing.
Did you always want to be a writer? Did you always want to work in marketing and brand marketing? Was that always kind of where you were going when you started out?
Media was always my first love. I'm originally from Chicago, born and raised in Chicago. Went to Columbia College, which is now the leading arts and communications school in the U.S., a huge institution now, quite small when I attended. And so I always knew I wanted to be in some form of media. And during those years, it was print journalism. It was broadcast media. I did some radio news broadcasting on a local radio station. That probably was my first love, but difficult to really get into then and now. And I wasn't willing to leave Chicago at that time to go to a smaller market that might offer an opportunity. So I knew I always wanted to be in it. And so, you know, I graduated, I got into the advertising world, an advertising copywriter in the corporate side. And ultimately, when I came out to California, when I relocated to California, is when I got into the PR business and found a really sweet job in the financial sector in Southern California. And that ultimately led to opportunities to be able to write for the media, which I still do today.
Great. So tell us in this pandemic and what we're going through, what are the forms of media that you think people read? Do they watch television? Are they reading email articles? Are they reading newspaper articles? What is the trend right now?
Well, online and digital certainly seems to be the place. People certainly are watching television because, one, they are home more, mm-hmm. Working from home or not working, if you will. Mm-hmm. So that would be one area, probably because of the political climate. They may be watching more television. But on a day-to-day basis, an hour-to-hour basis, it certainly is online marketing, looking at websites, reading newsletters, looking at social media. Social media, you know, let's face it, is just maybe blossomed. Mm-hmm. It's certainly booming with good and bad news, but certainly social media is the place you need to be. And then, you know, within that, I know this is kind of digressing a little bit, but then you've got the influencer market telling you about what's the latest and greatest product out there that you can't live without.
Right. So I want to ask you a question about that, because I think a lot of people tend to think that a lot of people know what an influencer is, or, you know, how those people are found. And explain that to us in terms of, you know, an influencer. And I think we all kind of know what they do, but there may be some of us that don't know, like, what is their part in all of this? Because it may seem normal to you and I, but a lot of our listeners may not understand what that does.
You know, at the end of the day, to borrow that old saying, they can become a product spokesperson for you, almost an unofficial product spokesperson. They're out there. I can't tell you how to find them, because then nobody will want me to do that on their behalf.
First of all, I think that term, a product spokesperson, I think really nailed it to explain what an influencer does.
They certainly are. And, but as I say, they are out there. And what you really need to research is, which influencers align with your product or with your company. So if it is vitamins, if it is dietary supplements, that's for children. Well, you want to reach influencers who reach moms, either regionally or nationally. You want them to hear about your product, use your product, and then write favorably about your product. So that's one area. They have things, and I don't believe they're doing it now, again, because of the pandemic that we're in, but they have influencer fairs, if you will, or influencer trade shows is what I call them, where you have a chance to pitch your product to influencers. So that's something, companies need to look at once the whole media climate changes and we're able to get out. Maybe once they find and use and have a vaccine, I don't know, but they are there. And so influencers are key. They, as I say, they are product spokespersons. They're not celebrity spokespeople, although a lot of influencers have become celebrities in their own right. But I'm saying not like a television or a screen actor or even a media person. A lot of media people become spokespeople for a product. So totally different, but same results in the end.
Right. Tell us, a lot of people have small businesses and some, mid and large, but they always start with something, right? They start with a product, or they buy a business, or, they're building their company. And especially during this time, I think this is a really important question. But, what do businesses need to do if, let's say, you've got a business owner and maybe he doesn't have enough, in his budget for a brand marketing professional or a communications consultant or something? Why is that important to find those funds to get that person? Because if you are not in the eyes of your customers, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind, right? So tell us in your words why it's important that you have someone like yourself connected with your company.
Before I answer that question, can you define what you mean by small business?
Well, it's interesting because small business can be anyone from 1 to 5 individuals. Small business could be anywhere from 20 million. It really depends, but it all starts small, right? Let's say if someone even purchases a product and they start with a staff of 1 to 5 people. So let's say 1 to 5 people.
You don't have a budget to develop marketing?
Right.
Shut it down. No, I'm kidding.
Well, that's the thing. It's interesting because you have to, as a business owner, you've got to figure out, okay, am I going to pay, funds for new product? Am I going to pay for new funds for advertising? Am I going to do, you have to allocate those funds. So, but one of the biggest mistakes that a lot of businesses can make when they're starting out is that information to get out to their future customers as well.
Yeah, it's something that small businesses often it's a step small businesses often make, and I kind of look at it like this. There's the online marketing, there's getting a product on Amazon. There's more to it than just putting your product on Amazon. There's a lot that goes into it. There's video that you need to produce. And I'm not talking about asking your brother-in-law to use his video camera.
Right.
Video. I'm talking about professionally produced video, motion graphics. That's another area of use, say, like on Amazon. So, you know, I think a smaller business really needs to focus more on online marketing, digital marketing versus, say, print that can get very costly, or broadcast. There's a place for that. But if the budget is small, you really need to start small, and you'll really reach more people promoting online. You know, I work a lot with companies in the U.S., certainly. I also work a lot with global companies, and they want to bring their products, retail products, over to the U.S. And a lot of them say, well, we want to get it into pharmacies, stores, chain pharmacies. But globally, they're totally unaware of what it takes to get a product on a store shelf. It's expensive real estate. And it really takes several years before a lot of companies like a CVS or a Walgreens, it'll take 2 to 4 years before they'll really commit to possibly putting a new product on their shelf, because they want to see all of the promotion, all of the advertising, all of the brand promotion that's developed, and how the consumer is reacting. It's also very costly. You just can't, again, put a product on a store shelf, even if you could do it day one. There's a lot of money that goes into that promotion, and paying for slotting fees and distributor fees, and the advertising part of it and the PR part of it. You know, and you're looking at spending a lot of money, and within that first year, while you may be making money, you're certainly not going to recoup everything that you spent. Now, that's for maybe a larger company or a company coming in from another country. But if you look at it from companies here in the U.S. who are based here and who are starting out, a lot of companies are starting to sell online versus going brick and mortar, mm-hmm. and that's okay. But again, you have to devote a good amount of time and money to get your product out there, be it advertising, digital advertising, making sure that your website has the utmost in information and consumer appeal, and to be able to drive people to that website so they're buying your product, or to drive them to Amazon, or drive them to another online site. And so using social media, having an aggressive social media team is very important. We're not talking about putting something out there once a week. We're putting information out there for some clients daily or multiple times a week, to be able to, in an effort to promote their product and grab consumer attention.
You know, it's interesting. I go back many years ago. I remember a conversation I had with someone, and they said, you know, if somebody developed this product that did this, I mean, they could make, you know, so much money, and there's so much more to it than that, right? I mean, and they think, if I get my product into a Walgreens or into a CVS, but it's a long road to get there. It's not easy at all. And we know that with our company, which is Refocus the Creative Office. But just for anyone, the words that you just said, I can explain them, but I'd love for you to as well. If someone's listening to this and they don't know what slotting fees are, can you kind of explain that to us?
Well, you know, the simple part of it is to be able to put a product on a store shelf. Products aren't just not put on a store shelf because it looks good, or it sounds good, or it's got a great name, or the package design looks good. It's to be able to, you know, be in essence kind of like being a pecking order, and to buy that space to be on that shelf. That's the way I look at it. Mm-hmm. That's the way I explain it. You know, if I may give you an example. This was a few years ago.
Please, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had a client, a tea company, medicinal tea company, and based in Southern California. And they were, and they still are, the largest distributor of teas to the Hispanic community. And so they had approached me about a rebrand, if you will, redesigning their packaging of about 12 SKUs. And we redesigned their packaging. The copy on the packaging was only in English, mind you, and yet they were selling to the Hispanic marketplace. So we developed a bilingual packaging copy on the packaging, redesigned it, made it kind of into an old school kind of look for the Hispanic community, and put that out there. While we were doing that, they said, you know, we've been pitching a large retail grocery chain in the South, in the Southwest. We've been unable to get them to commit to our line of teas. And so we looked at the whole process. I looked at the whole process and said, why not create a brand just for them, a store brand? And so we did. And I said, let's also develop some packaging, some sample packaging. I developed the name. Was instrumental in developing the whole look of about four different tea varieties, and then suggested that when they go make that pitch to the store buyers, that I be there with them, and that we bring in a PowerPoint presentation as to what we've got for them, a little history behind it, what the packaging looks like. And so we went in there, and when they failed the first couple times on their own, with this strategy, the grocery chain said, we love it, and virtually approved it on the spot, but approved it in less than a week.
Wow.
And for that client, we were able to get their product into 275 store chain across an area in the Southwest. So those are key points.
Wow, and that's a perfect example of where, you know, working with someone, even hiring somebody as a consultant, if they don't have someone on staff to do it, that could help them even go into a global market that they're not in. And that was my next question, because you had mentioned you do have global experience, Sheldon. In terms of let's take that tea company. So they're in the Spanish market, but let's say that they then are going to go into, you know, into the Europe area. So how does one go about that? I mean, do they hire someone like you? Do they or do they do it themselves? Because I think there's a lot of listeners that they've got great products, they've got great brands, they're ready to go. Even Amazon might be sending them emails saying, hey, you know, you're ready to go into this market. But as I tell people, you really need to think through that strategy before you make that jump.
They could hire me to do that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because we have contacts in several countries, and where we don't, I seek them out. There are other things to think about too, going into another country, as vice versa. And that's the regulatory issue, especially if you're looking at, say, dietary supplements or health products, the regulatory issues in a specific country. I happen to have some really great affiliations in Australia and in India. And so if a company wants to get a product into those markets where regulatory is an issue first and foremost, then I certainly can help them there. And in other parts of the world, we also have affiliations, maybe not as strong, but I'm able to do that as well. So that's the first thing. From a regulatory standpoint, do you pass muster? And then when you do, all of the other aspects of package design and copy on a package and overall promotion within a specific part of the world, what's involved, and we can adjust. And if we need help, we might call in, or I might call in an associate from another country to recommend somebody that I can work with. So yes, love the opportunity and have done that, especially in Australia. I've worked very closely with a regulatory firm there and bring products into that country.
And what, and Australia is actually very difficult to get your product into, right? If I'm correct on that, I know that a lot of supplement companies have wanted to do that and they eventually get there, but some of their restrictions are maybe more, do they have a stricter way of doing business with their regulatory area?
You know, they do. The TGA is, it can be very strict. You know, in Australia, they refer to supplements as we know them here as complementary medicine. And so there are stricter guidelines. They often look at U.S. products and U.S. way of doing business in the supplement market or the nutraceutical market, as it's often referred to, usually referred to here. They kind of look down on it sometimes. And feel because of their stricter guidelines that they have a better product.
Right, right.
Maybe not.
Sheldon, in terms of the dietary supplement and the claims, I know that there's, in the nutraceutical market, you have to be very careful in terms of, you know, saying this, you know, will cure cancer or this will make the inflammation go away or, you know, certain messaging statements like that. Have you seen, in your experience, have you seen examples where, you know, there's been an issue with that? Because I think that's something that a lot of individuals learn the hard way.
There are issues all the time and they continue to exist and maybe even more so now because of COVID-19, where a lot of companies, smaller companies, startup companies are saying they have products that will prevent COVID, which nobody can say that because products really can't, supplement products. So that happens. But aside from that, we see it, or I see it all the time. You know, I'm affiliated with a trade organization called the American Herbal Products Association. I did some work for them many, many years ago. So I'm very, very close to them now. And they're always letting their members know and associates about companies who are being issued cease and desist letters by the FDA because they've made these wild claims about what their products can do. If you say it cures cancer, that's the first thing that you'll get shut down as soon as the FDA finds it. It's interesting. You look at a lot of other companies or other countries, maybe India, let's take India, for example, you know, natural medicine really kind of started there, if you think about it, being the Ayurvedic medicine, right? Mm-hmm. But and so they have some very good and quality products and science and technology, but and they can talk about they have a product that works well if you have a specific type of cancer issue. You could certainly, if they brought tried to bring that product to the States, they wouldn't be able to make that kind of claim. So no claims are allowed in the U.S. And, you know, most companies, most all legitimate companies understand that.
Right. Absolutely. And the other thing, too, you have such a wide, vast experience in this area that I was reading some information about you that you've even worked with doing like celebrity events and putting together, you know, different PR events or brand marketing events, you know, with celebrities. When, you know, when is that appropriate for even a larger company or a mid-sized company to, you know, brand themselves with a celebrity? You know, when has it worked? When is it something that they should? Because a lot of people, I think, are a bit intimidated about doing that. So you have to have someone like yourself, of course, to make that connection. But why and when is it appropriate to bring in that celebrity?
I often think that every time is a good time. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly it comes, again, it comes down to money, doesn't everything?
Yes.
And in business. And I have worked in that area, both in the nutraceutical industry as well as in other areas of marketing and other types of companies for events, as well as launching a product or developing a brand program. And I once had a company executive tell me, "Oh, celebrities don't work." Well, if celebrities don't work, why do we see so many? Mm-hmm. In the media today, it's, and I'll tell you, if you don't see a celebrity, you often see something that aligns with a celebrity. You know, like, for example, these days, there's a series of television commercials with Rakuten, and they're using music from Elton John.
Mm.
Right away, everybody knows, everybody within that demographic knows Elton John music.
Right.
And they've changed the words, but it's they've changed the lyrics, but the music is his. And they have people playing not a real piano, but other things that are made out to be a piano, and they're dancing to it. So celebrities do work. My experience, I've launched a couple of products in the health industry with celebrities, and I was able to use them in various different scenarios, advertising, public speaking, media, taking them out on the media trail. Celebrities tend to open media doors. And if you contact a producer or an editor and say, I've got Miss Jones, rather than use a real name, mm-hmm. I've got Miss Jones, Jennifer Jones. Actually, that's a real name. That's a real person. that is available. She's talking about health, family health, and really promoting a specific product. They tend to say, yeah, I'd love to do an interview, be it a phone interview, be it a Zoom interview, doing a print story. So it can be, again, Zoom or phone interview. Also being able to use that person's name in news releases, get them on your website. There's so many different areas that you can use a celebrity these days. And people pay attention. And usually if a celebrity says, I use this product, or why do I use this product, and makes that emotional connection and has that passion behind it for a product or for a company, that can really get to the heart of people, and hopefully they'll buy the product. And I know that leads into another area, Angela,
mm-hmm.
the passion and having the will there to be able to share that with a consumer.
Yeah, please talk to us a little bit about that, because it's so true. Because if you're not passionate about, you know, what you're doing, you know, it comes through, right?
Sure. You know, again, in the health area, a lot of companies feel they need to lead with science. And I don't feel that that's the case, because for most consumers, they get left behind. They don't understand science. But if you're really passionate about a product, and you're talking about it from the heart and leading that way, and talking about brand and promoting brand, and then coming back to being transparent about the science and the development and the technology of a product, while it's secondary, it's still in the forefront. So you really have to be passionate about what you're selling, what you're developing, what you're manufacturing, and how it works for an individual or for a family. Those are key points.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got to ask you this question. So here you are in the pandemic, you know, we're all working from home, and hopefully we're going to get back to some way of normal in the future. But, you know, when you're trying to get a deadline, if you're facing a deadline and you're trying to get something out yourself, and let's say there might be, you know, chaos going around you, whatever that might be, with the phone ringing or, you know, dogs barking, whatever. How do you focus at home to get that deadline out? Because sometimes, you know, it's one thing when you're working on a project, on research, and you've got to get that out. That's one thing. But when you are writing and you're trying to meet a deadline, there's got to be some pressure there.
I used to have an office,
mm-hmm.
certainly a major investment, and I realized one day that in the area that I'm based in Northern California, in terms of clients and even prospective clients, they never came to that office.
Right.
I had staff, I had some freelance people that worked with me there. But in terms of my clients, they never came to that office. And I thought, this kind of seems ridiculous to spend all this money and not really get full use out of it. And so I'm fortunate to own a large home with a lot of rooms. And I thought, you know what, I'm moving my business into my home, because if I'm meeting clients, it's at a trade show, or I'm going to them. They don't want to leave the office, especially if it involves two or three people. They don't want all those people to be leaving the office. So they want me to come to them. And so I moved my business into my home. I have the privacy. And so I have an advantage. I had an advantage when the pandemic came around and everybody started working from home. I had a leg up, if you will, because I had been doing it for several years. And so, you know, I'm able to close a door and focus. I prefer, especially writing, I prefer to work in the morning, sharper in the morning, doing interviews in the morning, the same thing. It's a preference. Mm-hmm. And so, as I say, close the door, do my writing, doing my best work in the morning. Not that I can't do it in the afternoon or even at night when it gets quiet again. You know, the fact that I'm, my wife and I are foster parents for young children. We have been for about 10 years. So there's always little people running around the house and one thing or another. But still, I'm able to kind of shut that out and concentrate.
Wow. So, you know, I didn't realize you were a foster parent. That's fantastic. And that's truly wonderful. And I'd love to talk to you a little bit about that, because now are you having to play the role of parent and teacher as well? And how's that going?
Well, all the children that we care for are preschool age.
Okay.
So, you know, for example, currently I have a 14-month-old boy who's been with us since he was 2 days old.
Wow.
And he's about to go through the adoption process. So I haven't had the learning process has not actually been schooling, but it is learning in terms of learning about life, if you will, and talking about colors and objects and being around my wife in the kitchen when she's cooking and she's telling him what she's doing. And he kind of gets involved too, or he'll take a pot and he'll put imaginary objects in there and start stirring and stirring. So there's that kind of training. So the schooling aspect hasn't been there. But our goal is to, when that child does go on to a permanent situation, that they have at least somewhat of a foundation that they can take with them.
Absolutely. And, you know, since we did talk about that, I have to ask you, what was it that made you decide to become a foster parent? Because I have a passion for children myself. And so anytime I have the chance to ask that question, you know, maybe there's people out there that are on the fence of doing that. Can you just share a little bit about, you know, why, you know, you did it and why you continue to do it?
I'd love to. Thank you for asking me about that. Yeah, you know, going back about 10, 11, 12 years ago, my wife had a friend who was in that industry, was involved with an organization that was adoption and approaches about adopting a child. And we didn't think it was appropriate at that time. And then she had said to my wife about foster care. Well, that's a whole nother thing. So my wife approached me about it and we talked about it. I had not given it any thought up until then. And I thought, well, you know, that's one way to really give back, if you will. One way to give back, even before that term give back, was in our language, in the world, in the community. And so we looked into that and decided to give it a go. You know, went through the training portion of it. It took about a year to qualify. And once we did, now, as I say, we've been at it for 10 years. We've had 13 children.
Wow.
In 10 years.
13 children. Wow. I applaud you on that. That's so impressive.
Thank you. They're all either newborns or a few months old. We did have one child who was about 2.5 when she came to us, just a delightful little girl. And we thought, uh-oh, what do we get ourselves into? But it turned out to be just a magnificent experience. She was with us for about 9 months and then adopted by her aunt and uncle. And so, yeah, it's been a great experience. I hope that what we're able to do for these children, that they're able to take forward. And I know a lot of people, certainly a lot of professionals in the foster system, and a lot of health professionals feel that the base that we give them that they really do maintain and they take forward, and they always will remember that. So I hope so.
Absolutely. And I was on the board of CASA for 12 years, and it was an experience that I will treasure forever. It was really, it really makes you stop and take a moment with life. And so if anyone is on the fence, let's say that they're thinking about it, but you know, maybe they just don't know. And you were in that position too, as well. What would you say to them?
Check it out. Absolutely check it out. If they happen to be in California, and I know you reach a national audience, but there's the California Alliance of Caregivers in California. They're a statewide organization. To get a hold of them and be able to talk to a representative about what's involved, or to go to a county, because you have the county who's involved in foster care, and then you have private agencies. So there's always private agencies in every community. And so to be able to seek out a private agency and talk to them about the positive aspects of caring for a child. And as I say, we always work with care for young children or newborns, but you know, there are a lot of people who prefer to have an older child, especially, you know, if they have a child already that, say, is a teen, they might want to care for another teen who might be of same age or similar age. They're going to school together, so they can form that bond. So it doesn't need to be newborns and young children. It can be children of any age who need to have a solid foundation moving forward in life.
Wow. So 13 kids and you can still do your job. That's impressive, but even though it's been intermittent, but that's truly impressive. So, well, from what it sounds like, Sheldon, you honestly, you've worked in the nutrition field and nutraceuticals area. You've worked in a consumer products area. You've really touched on a lot of areas. So this interview has just been so valuable because like I said, it sounds like you really know how to look at a company and figure out what they need and how to get that messaging out to them. So that's, first of all, I thank you for your time, but I do have a question that we ask everybody. And, you know, for you, when you focus and you have to go to that meeting or you're going to go present something, and you get in your car and hopefully it's not, you know, during COVID, but you get in there and you're really trying to have game on. What is the music or the artist or the song? What is it that you listen to? Mm-hmm.
I'm an old school R&B guy.
Yeah?
An old school R&B guy. And so I have Sirius radio in my vehicle. And so I'll have a Groove or Soul Town type station. So it's the Spinners. It's the Four Tops. It's the Stylistics. Maybe some doo-wop music going back in the 50s and early 60s. So that's really my area of enjoyment and really kind of get into the music that way, get into the groove myself.
I love that, actually, because you're probably a lot of fun when you get to that meeting then with that kind of music. So, and like I said, and one thing I do want to say, I had mentioned it at the beginning of this show, is that I'd had an opportunity to work with Sheldon, and I had sent Sheldon some products that our company, Refocus, a creative office, made, and he was kind enough to do an article for us in the Nutraceuticals World publication that is just so, we're so appreciative of. So, you know, in the process of doing this article with you, Sheldon, you know, you found that there was actually a story behind this company. And even though we know it, we talk about it, you had an opportunity to take that and put that in the messaging of the entire article.
You know, we had the opportunity to meet through a executive retreat industry executive retreat in the nutraceutical dietary supplement industry. And when I heard your story, I was so taken by it about not only being in the recruiting side, but also here in, with the Refocus. And it was just a very, very interesting. And I've always said to clients that I've often said to them that if they have a story, I know how to tell it. Today, you hear a lot about companies wanting people who are storytellers. Well, it's always been there, at least I've always been telling stories. And so we chatted more, and I said, you know, I'd like to do an interview with you for one of the publications I write for. And I gave you a series of questions. You responded to it. I did some editing as I read through it. I was even more taken by your background and what you have accomplished. And I said, you know, there's another story here. Rather than just the Q&A type story, there's another story here. So I took that information and developed a feature piece. So I think I really know how to tell a story.
You
I think
do. Absolutely.
I think you would agree with me.
Yeah. Thank you very much. No, and you're absolutely right, because many people know I have I own an executive search firm as well. And many times we will get the recommendation, hey, we're looking for somebody that's a storyteller. And you either know how to do that or you don't. And for anyone listening, just so you know, with our company Refocus Creative Office, all of our products are created through the eyes of a child with ADHD. And that child is my child. He was diagnosed in the fifth grade. I was a single mom. It was a journey. And I ended up being diagnosed at the age of 45. And I had to learn to look through his eyes to help him, which then in turn into this amazing company where we create products to help you focus.
And you do have some amazing products. And I'll tell you another one more quick example was a trade organization in the nutraceutical industry based in India happened to find them on LinkedIn, sent them a message saying, I'd love to do an interview with you for one of the trade publications, nutraceutical trade publications I write for. And they said, yeah, I'd love to do it. Sent them some questions, send the head person questions. Got that back to me. Similar kind of situation with you, Angela, where it was just an amazing story about what this organization had done, what this individual had created for companies in India and other parts of the world as well. And I said, you know, we've got a story here, and I'd like to develop a news release about what you've done and distribute that. And I wasn't talking about any compensation.
No.
Looking for compensation, but it was just a great story. And I felt like writing about it and want to get it out there. So for this organization in India, that's what we did. And like within less than a week, we were able to pick up about a half a dozen media placements worldwide, not just the U.S., but worldwide. And
wow.
Built a really great relationship along the way.
Wow. Well, like I said, for anyone listening to this, what he just described is exactly how you would work with someone like Sheldon. He made it very easy, and it was a great experience working with him. And if you are working with another consultant that maybe you don't feel like you can, you're missing the message or you're not communicating, you know, I would encourage you to look at others, because that messaging piece is so important, because if it's turned the wrong way, it can actually do more damage. So Sheldon, you're a pro, and you know, we'll leave it at that, because I could talk about you all day long, but I thank you. And you're definitely an amazing storyteller.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to be here today and to get to know you.
This podcast is sponsored by A. Stevens & Associates, an executive search firm that places C-suite executives in the pharmaceutical, biotech, consumer, food, and nutrition industries. You can find more at astevensandassociates.com.